Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives,
to the outer reaches of Xenos infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and once again, as ever, I'm joined by the illustrious Steve. How are you, Steve?
Very good, mate. Very good.
God, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
It's good to be back, yeah.
It is good to be back. Apologies, dear fans, dear listeners. Real life has somewhat got in the way of podcasting. However, we are back and hopefully resuming our, I'd say relatively regular schedule, but our regular schedule was slightly irregular anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, like you say, real life from a warp gets in the way.
Absolutely. However, today we're going to be talking, I was going to say all about Kill Team, but it's not just going to be all about Kill Team because our box has only just arrived. And shout out to G-Dubs for firing that box over to us. We're going to be talking a little bit about the box, but yeah, obviously we couldn't do an episode like this ahead of time before the pre-orders without their support. So thank you to them. Yep. And what a box it is, eh, Steve?
It's a hefty old thing, isn't it? I mean, got to be like the heaviest box yet, hasn't it?
I'm not sure it's the heftiest yet, but it certainly is hefty.
A lot of scenery in there. A lot of really cool
scenery. The original Kill Team was very, very heavy.
Yes. We'll have to try and get way off, see who wins.
Well, we'll have to try and find an original Kill Team in pristine condition.
I'm not sure our wallets are deep enough for that, Dan.
No, certainly not. Not the prices they get on eBay. But however, we're going to be talking all about the contents first. And then what we're going to be doing is talking a little bit about the setting and the lore surrounding this new version of Kill Team. And then we're going to be talking about some Crusade armies that we've created to go along the kind of two forces. So Steve's taken the Death Corps of Krieg and I've taken Orcs. And since we're talking about Krieg, Plastic Krieg, Steve.
Oh, they're really good. They're really good.
Plastic Krieg, goodness gracious, what's going on?
It's so left field. I mean, no one was predicting it. I think it's the great kits, super detailed, as you'd want with the skirmish force, for both armies. But yeah, I mean, all the lovely little details from the demo expert specialist, the medic and all that stuff, yeah, they're great, and they're absolutely spot on, you know, with matching anything that you've got with your Forge World model. So no, oh, they're dangerous, Dan. Very dangerous.
They are dangerous. Now I'm wondering, do I get rid of all my old resin stuff and just wait for the whole new wave of Plastic Krieg, or do I kind of keep it as OG so I can kind of like gatekeep the newbies? Do you know what I mean? The bandwagoners. So I can just be like, like, you're not a real Krieg fan because you don't have like all this original OG stuff, you know? Original OG. Obviously the O in OG stands for original. So I don't know why. Original OG gangster, right?
You young people, Dan. You young people. No, so I don't know. We don't know if we're getting more. We kind of hope so, but we don't know if we're getting more. And if what more means, it's too exciting. We've got to kind of think maybe it would, because the kits are super flexible. They're not just push fit, get started sets, are they?
No, and they did say on the Warcom stream that they have been specifically designed for Kill Team and have clear application in 40K. However, the kits themselves have been designed as a Kill Team kit. So, which is why you can build all the various different, you know, specialists with all the kits.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, we can do some wish listing or a bit of guessing here. And the fact that, you know, we do see some things drop off the Forge World website because, you know, they're old, they don't sell well enough, whatever it needs to be. But we do keep seeing the Death Corps models getting refreshed, remolded, remastered, whatever it is. And so we can keep our fingers crossed.
We can. I'm looking forward to Plastic Death Riders.
Oh, how good would they be?
Yeah, really cool. Because the resin ones are an absolute beep to assemble.
Yes. Yeah, they are. They are. And I think, you know, I do love them because they are very noble looking sculpts. I think they do feel it. But you compare it now to what can be done in plastics when you've got, you know, just one hoof on the ground. and everything else in full charge with lances and, you know, pendants flapping in the wind, they would look pretty special, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they're very much of their time, and, you know, clearly clear restrictions from the casting process, whereas, you know, designing them in CAD for plastic production's got it's got amazing dynamic new models written all over it.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, we've got new commandos as well.
And to be honest, they're just as good. Okay, you know, we've already got commandos, and the same way we've already got Krieg, but the character in these is just fab. And I think as much as anything, the intro video, the teaser video that we had for this new kill team was really just set them up great.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the sort of Blood Axe style, I guess. You know, the original Blood Axe commandos, actually, I had a set of those when I was a kid. They're very cool, very cool models. But we've come a long way since then. And I feel like these plastic ones are, I guess, like the metal ones, but just kind of refined and tuned. They're quite similar to the original, not the original metals, but the kind of the replacement metals.
Yes. Yeah. And again, these are all set up brilliantly for kill teams. So, and yet still very usable for 40K. So, yeah. But obviously, you've gone in big time on the snaggers. So orcs are on your table at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I was feeling a little bit kind of put out slightly because I had put in a fair amount of effort into converting some Age of Sigmar Auruk Warclans models, the kind of old Savage Orc models, and you know, converting them to be 40K boys. And then suddenly Games Workshop come along and go like, oh, you know, all these new models. And you're just like, oh, great. So I didn't need to convert any models. But actually, it is quite cool because I can use those as Snakebite boys, and then I can use my Beast Snaggers as actual Beast Snaggers. So it's completely fine.
More is always better when it comes to orcs.
Absolutely. And I can use my converted Boar boys as War Bikers, and I can use Squidhog boys as Squidhog boys. So it is like totes legit. It's going to be an amazing squiggy kind of army slash...
Yep.
What do you call it? Snake bite army.
Kicking butt across the realm, across the universe, mate.
Realms. Wrong system.
Buddy. Yeah. Got to keep both two plates from spinning.
Absolutely. So, Steve, tell us about the kind of setting of Kill Team, the new version of Kill Team. Where is it set? So we've got this kind of Octarius book in the box. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So we've had loads of great material for the Caradon war zones. So we've had campaign books, we've had, you know, regular war zone information in White Dwarf, which breaks it down to individual planets, into individual areas with lots of really cool rules and lots of great crusade stuff. So we've now moved across to Octarius, and I think for me it was like, okay, what's the difference then? Because is it just more fighting and, you know, another piece of the universe with some industrial stuff and some hive stuff? Do you kind of think, well, you know, what's the big deal? What's different? And right from the off, it really does that. And there's some really cool build up to it. And in fact, that this sector's been a long time. There's been fighting between the Imperium and the orcs. So they've got very big strongholds here. So for a long time, High Fleet Leviathan's been slowly coming into this area. And what the Imperium was doing is they basically want to try and slow it down. So they've been taking certain planets, clearing them off as best they can. And the ones that weren't, they were just doing exterminus and destroying everything there. The whole idea is to try and slow the Hive Fleet, starve it of biomass. And that was kind of working. But then Inquisitor Crypman had a good idea.
He obviously... Oh, good. I can see this going terribly wrong already.
No, it's 100% going to happen. It's going to be fine. So the plan was, well, in this war zone, we've got a lot of orcs. They like fighting. We've got a high fleet of Tyranids. They like fighting. Well, why don't we just turn their attention on each other rather than on the Imperium? That'll work, right?
Wrong.
So you've been peeking ahead. So they load up a Space Hulk, which was called Perdition's Flame, and it's full of Gene Stealers that they captured. So these are captured Gene Stealers from the Imperium. Load them up. And they send them off towards the Orc Empire.
I just love, sorry, just captured Gene Stealers. Just, I'd love to have seen that process.
Well, that's the Kill Team few games there, right there, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you imagine trying to, like, subdue a Gene Stealer?
Yeah, look the other way. Punch on the nose. Yeah.
No, what's that behind you? Look, someone's wearing a brand new pair of Levi's. And they're like, oh, tasty, tasty, tasty.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think there's some games there. And I think actually, almost every step of this bit of the story, you kind of go, oh, that's a game there. Oh, that's a game there. That's a Kill Team there. That's there. So, you know, obviously they've written it with that in mind because we're going to be going Kill Team. But all of these things easily spin out into Crusade games, into bigger games. So I think for me, this is really, really strong. And I'm excited to see, read all the White Dwarf ones and all that stuff. So we've got a plan. And we set it off into motion. So there's a number of these Gene Stealers go off and infiltrate worlds, and it all kicks off. So we've got the Orcs fighting the Tyranids, and basically you kind of get this rolling momentum of more Orcs, more Tyranids, and once this big fight kind of rumors go out, many other Orcs in the region kind of go, actually, there's a fight on, lads.
Mega scrap going on.
Yes.
Let's get involved.
Let's get involved. And they all start piling in. And obviously, that fighting creates more biomass, which means the Tyranids get stronger. And actually, something that we do know is the more the Orcs fight, the bigger and stronger they become in this fight. And actually, you know, countless millions of them actually rush to the sector, as it says here, in what promises to be the scrap of the century, which I quite liked. And obviously, everyone, the Crypman, whose master idea was this, starts getting a bit twitchy. And there's other Inquisitors that are on the scene that are kind of going, dude, this was always a bad idea, and it's only getting worse. So what we have is this huge, colossal fight going on, which is just building the strength of both of them. So what's decided is they're going to have this thing called the Cordon Impenetra, which is a set of warden worlds, warden planets, that were going to be fortified to basically try and keep them in. It's just kind of shut the door, turn the music up and pretend they're not there. And that's kind of the kicking off point, or one of the kicking off points from where we're going to go for Kill Team. And what that means is we've kind of got these locations where either overspilling onto a warden planet, or what the Inquisition still wants to do is they still want to be able to go in and capture these things and understand why the Orcs are getting bigger and stronger. And for me, this feels like one of the reasons why perhaps, you know, we're now seeing Orcs with a higher toughness, but also the fact that we're then going to also get the Orcs wanting to push into the warden world, and the Orcs are going to, and so we've got all of these kind of pushing at the boundaries, and I think that's where Kill Teams come in, and that's where Kill Teams come in really strong, and you've got these critical missions to go in and, you know, shut down a generator, to go in and break through some sewers, to open up a new front somewhere. And I think that's one of the real kicking off points. And there's one really cool one as well. So this is called Faith is Strength. And this was an Imperial Navy war group that was returning back after suppressing an Orc freebooter tribe. When suddenly there is a Gene Stealer cult takeover of the ships. And it's complete mess, blood everywhere, corridors full of it, fighting going on. One Imperial frigate, the Emperor's Javelin, successfully puts down the uprising on board its ship, rushes for help, eventually comes back with troop ships laden with Death Core, and then becomes a long fight of retaking the vessels with thousands of Kreek fighters going from ship to ship. And I think for me, this is really cool because, you know, hopefully we've all kept our Space Hulk tiles, our tiles from Rogue Trader, Kill Team box set, all of those things. I always keep my tiles. It's always used for tiles.
Yeah, so this has just got fighting in Space Hulk tiles written all over it. Or even like if you're lucky enough to have a Zone Mortalis set.
Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. So even though we've got, you know, this fantastic box set full of scenery for, you know, the scrappy worlds of Octaria itself, which is absolutely rammed to the brim with orcs and their scrap cities, it's just a great little couple of paragraphs there that are like, well, you know, that's a whole series of games right there, you know, fighting from, say, the shuttle bay all the way through the hold to, you know, try and get to the bridge to take control of the ship, to vent all the cultists out the doors. And that's before even the orcs, you know, commandos turn up to try and grab, you know. So I think for me, it's a great solid setting for this. And I think what we've also got is we've got some new insights. We begin to see a few new insights of things.
Is there any specific thing that you really enjoy seeing?
Yeah. So what we're told is that the main forces, the bulk of the defences of the Warzone Octarius is the Astra Militarum. So super excited about that. Happy that they'll get some more love and attention. But because of the momentum of this fight, actually, casualties are high. I mean, casualties in Astra Militarum are always high, but they're even higher here. And one of the things that we learn that they do is they merge regiments. So
that sounds really interesting.
Yes. So I guess you'd kind of always thought that would happen. But I think maybe whether it's we've gone down to the kill team level or whether it's just the need that's come up here, what they try and do is they try and find similar skill sets from different regiments and kind of merge them together. And one of the examples they give us is the 876th Talan Desert Raiders were merged with the 112th Athlonian Tunnel Rats. And obviously Talan live underground or lived underground, and that's how they survived it. So they then become this new unit, which has obviously got the skills of both of them. So I think that's kind of a really cool idea, and that sounds like it could be something that absolutely you could bring into Crusade, in the spirit of Crusade and in the spirit of the series of games you're doing, not just trying to cherry pick the super tough units from different regiments and for whatever reasons. But yeah, so I think for me that's interesting that if this idea of merged regiments, you know, ever comes to, you know, 40K in full, then I'd be quite excited about that. Even if it's just modelling, you know, even if you just pick a couple of units, run them as just infantry squads, but they've got some equipment, they've got some heraldry, they've got some elements that kind of hints back to where they've come from. I think it's pretty cool.
Do you think we'll see regiments as units then, you know, in a future Astra Militarum book, rather than having regimental doctrines define how your army work, you might have a almost like a battle group doctrine, which isn't, let's say, Catachan or Cadian, and then maybe you can have Cadian shock troops who are more sort of elite, you know, ballistic skill 3 rather than 4 or something like that. Or you might have Death Corps Krieg, who are sort of more like conscripts, you know, they're weapon skill 4, but they might, sorry, they're ballistic skill 4, but they might be, say, let's say, weapon skill 3 to represent their kind of brutality in close combat with the bayonet charges. Or maybe you've got Catachan units that are more strength and tough, you know, maybe they're strength 4 or toughness 4 or something like that, but they are, they're all troops units, and you just pick which type of regiment is representing that unit. I don't know whether that's like an individual thing, so you can have, like, you know, all your veterans are Cadians, or perhaps you just have Cadian and you can have like a Catachan veteran squad or a Cadian veteran squad or, you know, a Krieg veteran squad, but over on top of that you decide what type of army it is and whether it's a, you know, perhaps it's an armored infantry battle group, so your benefits are more kind of conceptual or thematic rather than specific to a certain regiment, which allows people to mix up regiments of all types and have different modeling opportunities. You know, do you think that could work?
There's plenty of stories of, you know, hard bitten last stands of, you know, whatever's been left on that planet, and they would come together and they would fight side by side, or they've suddenly been given a really difficult combat role and they're going to go, right, well, we've got half the troops here are perfect for that, but we need more. Who's the nearest regiment? Well, they've got specialists in, you know, jungle fighting. Right, we're going to bring those over and we're going to invite you two teams. In you go and sort it out. So I think it feels like, you know, the Astra Militarum don't have to be always quite so strict in that it's just thousands of people lined up and pushed across the battlefield. That is how the bulk of them fight, but that's not how they would all fight. And certainly when you get down to kill team, when you're looking for specialists to do special roles, absolutely, you would then cherry pick people. So, yeah, no, I think it's exciting. And I think I'd love to see it in the bigger game. And I'd love to see it as, you know, part of, you know, maybe requisition points could be spent to pull in a merge regiment ability.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm not sure. I wonder what it looked like. I wonder whether you'd perhaps lose the individual flavour of themed armies. I'm not sure. So perhaps we'll have to wait and see to the new codex.
Yes. Yes. And but the fact that it smells like it could be sooner rather than later gets me very excited.
Oh, it gets me excited too. As a renegade guard fan, you know, I can just run whatever I like.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think of the terrain in the box, Steve?
Yeah, it's great. I think it's got a little bit of height to it, but not too much. I think the one thing that I really like is we've actually got some low stuff and some line of sight blocking, so it doesn't look too tournament ready, if that makes sense. It feels like a skirmish table. I think that's what I'm trying to say. It feels like a skirmish table. And for me, that's when you get the little scatter stuff and the big stuff. Because I think in some ways, when you look at a table and you've got like a, you know, a sort of L-shaped ruined building, which is, you know, crumbled down each side, looks great, but then everything else is clear around it, I'm kind of like, so who cleared up the rest of the building? Where's that gone? You know?
Yeah. There's definitely a bit of suspension of disbelief for the sort of tournament style, as you say, L shapes.
Yeah, and you know, I'd probably agree that, you know, it's not just tournament that needs proper line of sight these days, because shooting is strong, and you know, tables are a little bit smaller if you're playing that way. So you do need line of sight blocking with the new game. Otherwise, you know, you can get unlucky, don't go first, caught in the open, and it can get really messy. So I think it's important, but. Yeah, and I love some of the themey stuff as well, like the little nodding donkey drill head, or no, what would it be? The oil rig.
Oh, like the oil well type thing, yeah.
Thank you. Yes, there you go, Dan. Saved the day.
Yeah, no, yeah. They're good, aren't they? But what do you think? Does that represent a certain time or space in the lore? You know, is that a certain planet, or is this just kind of generic to the whole kind of Orky Empire in the system?
I think we'll get to know more and more. I mean, I think what we're talked about in the setup rules is that, especially Octaria, the kind of capital planet, it's got scrap cities, and it's those scrap cities that we begin to learn a little bit more about. So the fact that the lower levels are where the grots kind of hang out, and many of these scrap cities are literally you know, tens, if not hundreds of miles deep, because they just build more scrap on top of more scrap on top of more scrap. So, you know, they're kind of getting a almost kind of hive style, hive city style sort of sense of it. So I think this scenery really does kind of work on that. And especially when it comes to things like we read about, Tyranid infiltration into the lower levels, where they take over the grots and then they start moving up inside the scrap cities. So infiltrating Tyranid armies within this scenery, you know, because we've got doors and we've got grates and all that sort of stuff. I think it's great. And there is a lot of it, and I think that's really, really important for skirmish games.
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement about the terrain that came in the original Kill Team box, which was the kind of the new Sector Imperialis. But it is really nice to see some Orky terrain, I think, overall.
Yes, and I think that all of this will just drop in nicely. You can add your mech workshop here, and it will just drop in perfectly, and it will look great. So I think there's so much stuff. And even if you took some elements of it and just plastered that on other things, do you know what I mean? Or connected them to some existing Imperial, because, you know, the orcs took over here before. It wasn't just their planets originally. So, I think there's loads of good material here.
So what we'll do now is we'll break down our two forces. So I set Steve the task of creating two different forces with the Deathcore Krieg, clearly using some of the elements that were in the box itself. Now, what I did then is I looked at his list and created two sort of responsive forces, or two adversarial forces, that would then tie into the narrative that Steve proposed. So Steve's going to go through one of his lists now, and I'm going to then talk about the list that I built to respond to it.
Yeah. So these are 25 power level Crusade starting forces for 40K. So we're not going in depth into the kill teams or rules in this episode. So what I wanted to do is kind of take two aspects of Deathcore Krieg and really just make them even more flavorful if I could. So I've got one which is going to be, they're going to be on a warden planet. They're going to be starting in trenches, and literally it's about retaking territory that we're going to try and fight back. And I wanted the absolute traditional trench sort of experience. So we start off with HQ, which is a Deathcore Marshal. I want to give them the Warlord trait of implacable determination. That means they can pick one unit plus themselves, and when they choose to advance, they advance 6 inches instead of having to roll. See, my idea here is that literally going over the top, the Marshal will lead, and to help with that, I've given him the Death Mask, or Death Gas Mask, I'd like to say.
Very good.
Which gives him a four-up invuln, and at the start of each of my turns, I get to heal D3 wounds. So just this idea of this unstoppable leader that just going to inspire everyone to follow. So I'm kind of excited about that. And what you got to remember as well is if we use the Forge World rules, so we've actually got regimental doctrines already in place for Deathcore. So that's the Cult of Sacrifice, which means they take no mods for combat attrition, and any heroes that or any characters that die before they're removed, unless they're in a vehicle and exploded, before they're removed, they get to shoot or fire again. So basically just absolute grizzled badasses that just won't go down, which is great, which really feels like the sense of it. So we're led by the Marshal. We're going to have three infantry squads with a platoon commander. Again, we want to keep them super mobile, so no heavy weapons here. It's going to be flamers. We're just absolutely going to try and clear the enemy in the opposite trenches or in the opposite buildings. We just want to take them down. We have got a special weapons squad. We're going to take that because we're going to probably meet something big if we're entering a war zone that's currently, you've got orcs. I mean, orcs could be anything. Giant orcs, giant vehicles, giant robots. So we're going to need something with a bit more punch to take them down. And to support this kind of walking death corps of Krieg line of brave warriors, I've got two weapon squads. One's going to have heavy bolters. You just need some machine guns to get that theme right. Some autocannons, just bigger machine guns. And then a cheeky heavy mortar battery from Forge World. So we've just got to have a bit of indirect as well. I did look at mortars as another heavy weapons squad. But I'm not sure mortars feel like they're working quite right.
In what sense? What was it about them?
Just don't know. They feel like they're going to do enough work. So maybe if it's hard to know. So I suppose they're slightly inflexible, and that if you did go up against hordes of gaunts or hordes of boys, then great. They're brilliant. Love them. But if you don't, then they're not really doing the job. So hence things like autocannons and heavy bolters are just a bit more punch. Just got a little bit more chance to do stuff. And then in the spirit of Crusade, I've picked an agenda for them, which is Sentinel, where I pick one objective, and if I get one unit and I pick a unit, and if I can get that unit on that objective by the end of the game, I get another 4 experience points. So that kind of like, you know, word from the top is we've got to take this next trench, or we've got to take this pillbox full of orcs. That's where the flag is. That's where we're heading. Over the top, guys, let's go. Just overwhelm them with machine gun fire, mortar fire, and flamers, and just take them down. So that was my themed list. So what have you decided? What have you decided then, dude? Well, how are you going to fight me back?
So I thought I would. This is quite interesting because we did say we'd build on the kill team one, and actually, my second list has the kill team elements because it has the commandos in it. This one doesn't. So I was very lucky enough to snag myself a beast snagger box. See what I did there? Mm-hmm. When they got released a couple of weeks ago, or pre-orders a couple of weeks ago at least. And so I basically decided to build a force to fight your force, to kind of get them out of the trenches and to take over this kind of warden planet. So something really aggressive. The theory was that they'd already been fighting the Tyranids, so I wanted to use justify the use of the beast snaggers. So there's justification from a narrative perspective, but also B, yep. You know, clearly I had this box and I thought, I wonder what it comes to. So first up, we've got the kind of core of the list is 10 beast snagger boys. And I thought if they're going to be assaulting you in your trenches, I'm going to want them to be relatively kind of resilient.
Yep.
So there's a really interesting. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be referring to some of the kind of stratagems in the Orc Codex. Because clearly that's new, and so I thought people might be interested to see what kind of things exist in there as well. So there's a stratagem called Tough as Squighide. So for 2 CP, it's a battle tactic stratagem. Beast snaggers live tough lives. Their hardy greenskin constitutions pushed to extremes by the dangerous beasts they surround themselves with. As a result, even the lowliest beast snagger boy can take a tremendous amount of punishment before being slain. So you can use this stratagem in any phase when a beast snagger infantry, cavalry, or monster unit from your army is selected as target of an attack. So this would be a great thing to use on the boys themselves. Until the end of that phase, each time an attack is made against that unit, an unmodified wound roll of 1-3 for that attack fails, irrespective of any ability that weapon or model-making attack may have. So this is essentially transhuman physiology, which you may remember from the Space Marines Codex, on orcs. And I think, you know, if you've got, say, you know, beast snaggers left out in the open because they've killed whatever it is they're fighting, and, you know, you've got some heavy mortars about to rain down on them, then I can use this this stratagem to make sure that you're not wounding them on, you know, on 2s or 3s.
Yeah.
What's the strength of a heavy mortar battery, Steve?
So heavy mortar battery is 48 inches, heavy D6, strength 6, AP 1, damage 2, blast.
So that would clearly be a poor use of the stratagem, because with strength toughness 5 boys, then you're only wounding me on 3s anyway. So perhaps your autocannons, when you open up with your heavy weapon teams, you know, that would be a good use. I think negating your 3s rather than your 2s and 3s isn't as productive or as efficient. But anyway, that's the stratagem. So that's quite a good little stratagem, I thought.
Yeah.
So you've got 10, two sets of 10 beast snagger boys. I thought I'd go for 2 sets of 10 rather than 1 set of 20, just because I quite like the idea of, you know, having lots of different options in terms of, you know, maybe going some on the left flank and some on the right flank or whatever.
Yep.
And then, you know, moving on for some more kind of troopy type things, but I thought I'd take the Squighog boys. And when I say I thought I'd take, you know, clearly I basically looked at the box and this is what I got. So you've got 3 Squighog boys, clearly,
yeah.
And you have a knob on Smasher Squig. So I've also got old Zod, what's his name? Let me just look up his name, make sure I get it right. Zod Grod Wart Snagger. So he's clearly a special character. I could equally use him as a runt herd or something, but I thought I'd use Zod Grod Wart Snagger because that meant that I could do something which I'll talk about later. But I thought I'd make my warlord the knob on Smasher Squig. So quite interestingly, so for 4 power level, he's an elite choice, but clearly he's still a character, so you can still make him your warlord and still give him relics. So yep. I've given him the Beast Hide Mantle relic. And I've given him Surly as a Squiggoth. Now, clearly in Crusade, you'd have to have the right requisition to do all this. But this is kind of what I would want to do once I had the relevant points. Or if I was using this in a match play environment, then this is what I'd do. So Beast Hide Mantle would make him slightly more resilient. Not least, of course, that the Beast Snagger rules in general. Every time a model with this ability makes an attack that targets a vehicle monster, they get plus one to the hit roll. So that's in general, just making them hittier. But each model in a Beast Snagger unit has a 6-up and vulnerable save. So across all Beast Snagger units, you're getting a 6-up and vulnerable anyway. However, I'm going to go over to the relics. This isn't a Crusade relic. This is a standard relic. But you know, as I say, this I built this as a 25 level power level kind of Crusade force, and then thought if I was going to use it match play, what match play rules would I give it? So this the Beasthide Mantle. It's clearly a Beast Snagger model only, and you add one to the bearer's attack characteristic, and every time you'd lose a wound, you roll 1d6. On a 5-up, that wound is not lost. So not only do you have a natural 6-up and vulnerable, but you know, a third of every wounds that you lose, you're going to save again.
Wow, yeah, that makes him tough.
So he gets plus one attack, and he is 4 attacks base, so that would go up to 5 in this instance. So I had given this guy the Surly as a Squiggoth Warlord trait. And actually, even now, just reflecting back on the Snakebite rules, I've realized I've made a massive mistake. So I've gone on about the stratagem Tough as Squighide, which is essentially transhuman physiology for 2 CP. But now, looking at the Snakebite rules, I realize that they have that already. So each time an attack is made against a unit with this culture, that is the Snakebite culture, unless that unit has a strength characteristic of 8 or more, an unmodified wound roll of 1-3 for that attack fails.
Wow.
So Snakebites essentially have that that stratagem kind of baked into their rules anyway. I suppose that the stratagem for 2 CP allows me to do it if you have anything with strength 8 or more. So there we go. Always learning. I suppose that's what happens when you start making lists with a new book and in a bit of a hurry. So this warlord, going back to the warlord trait, he's got Surly as a Squiggoth. The first time this warlord is destroyed, you can choose to roll 1d6 at the end of a phase instead of using any rules that are triggered when the model is destroyed, e.g. Orcs is never beaten stratagem. You can guess what that does. If you do so, roll a 4-up, set this warlord back on the battlefield as close as possible to where it was destroyed and not within engagement range of any models with d3 wounds remaining. So I just thought that was quite interesting because not only have you got that kind of natural 6-up for Beast Snaggers, you've also got the natural snake bite. Now we know that they've got the natural transhuman physiology for snake bites, but you've also got, even when you do kill him, he's coming back on a few wounds anyway.
Yeah. No, you've got to construct a lot of fire to remove him properly from the table.
Yeah, I thought so. And especially at 25 power, you know, bringing back a 4 power model, that's a significant, you know, in a small game, that's a real big issue. So that got me to, I want to say, like 20-something points or whatever. So I had, I think that was 22. So with a couple of more power left, I bought 10 grots. So obviously they're not in the Beast Snagger box, but I had some spare points. And that allows me to use old Zodgrod's Super Runts ability.
Okay. What does that make him?
So at the start of the first battle round, select one Gretchen Core unit from your army to be Zodgrod's Super Runts. Each time a model in that unit makes an attack, add run one to that attack's hit roll. The unit can shoot whilst performing an action without that action failing. So I just thought it was interesting. And clearly you'd want to be doing this to a large unit of grots. Obviously with the power level that I had left, I only had 10 of them. So definitely, there's definitely scope to kind of make that a unit of 20 for different games. But yep. that is my army with a few kind of match play you know, things thrown in for if I wanted to use it in a different environment.
No, I think my immediate thinking, oh, blimey, how am I going to deal with those two lots of boys? But I think I've got to worry about the Squighog boys and the Smasher Squig first, haven't I? Because they're going to come charging at me, so...
Oh, they are. And they're going to be... So there's even... Sorry to jump in with another pawn, but there's even another stratagem called Unstoppable Momentum, which I really like. It allows your Squighog units to, or sorry, your knob on Smasher Squigs rather, to kind of cross the board with some degree of speed. So it's 1 CP. Smasher Squigs are essentially battering rams on legs. Even after trampling one foe, they plunge headlong into the next. So use this stratagem in your charge phase. After a knob on Smasher Squig unit from your army finishes a charge move, if there are no enemy models within engagement range of that model, it can immediately be selected to declare a charge again.
Not a pile-in, it's another charge.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh dear. Yes.
So that combos with, you might be thinking, how do you charge a unit and then not be kind of within range? So Smasher Ed, each time this model finishes a charge move, Select one enemy unit that is within engagement range of this model and roll 5d6. For each roll of a 4+, the enemy unit suffers one mortal wound. So if you've got, a handful of I don't know, Elder Guardians or something puny in your way, you can charge, or maybe like a hero on a couple of wounds left, you can charge your knob on Smasher Squeak into that unit. You finish your charge move each time this model finishes a charge move, which it happens at the same time as the when the model finishes a charge move. So you choose to do this one first. You roll your d6. You do your mortal wounds, and then suddenly, and that happens simultaneously to the fact that they are now no longer in charge range. I think that's how it works, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's otherwise it wouldn't
work. So I think that's how it works. So you kind of basically, like, you charge through your stuff, you smash with your mortal wounds, and then it allows you to then charge again.
Yeah.
If I've got that wrong, listeners, do let me know.
I'm sure they will.
They're very good at that. Right. So Steve, tell us about your second army.
So Second Army wanted to do something a little bit different. So we've had our trenches, we've had our force that's there to either fight them off or, you know, try and trudge forward and just take a few more meters of battleground step by step. So the next one I wanted to do was a little bit more of a recon force. So we've gone for the Death Riders. So this is the Mounted Cavalry Death Corps Krieg. So at our core, we've got three units of Death Riders, or three Death Rider squadrons. We're going to be led by a Death Rider squadron commander, which makes sense. And the idea is that they're going to be charging across the battlefield, looking to break lines, find a weakness in the line to punch through, or there has been a punch through and they're now racing through, looking for opportunities to keep pushing forwards and keep that momentum. And to support that, I've actually got two breaching drills, Hades breaching drills, supported with a combat engine, Forge World Death Corps Krieg combat engineer squad following them up. So kind of a combination 1-2, the horses should charge in and then popping up behind you if you haven't got enough troops spread out there. So very much a sort of smash and grab list to bring that to life.
So in the narrative of this army, do you see the Death Riders charging in first and then the Hades breaching drills coming up? Or do you see... I am always seeing it the other way around. I mean, clearly, Steve, it's your army, but the Hades breaching drills coming up, like wrecking the kind of fortification and sowing disarray, and obviously, you know, smashing stuff up with explosions, and these engineers coming out and kind of laying waste behind the enemy lines. And whilst the lines are all disruptive, then the cavalry charging in and kind of mopping up the remainder.
Yeah, that's what I said, wasn't it?
I thought you said the Death Riders came in first.
Well, I think I'm just showing how flexible my list building is.
I like it. I like it, Steve. You're a tactical mastermind. And I suppose that would be very Kriegy, wouldn't it? You know, just like, you know, glorious charge into the mouth of hell itself. But
yeah, no, I think that works great. I think, you know, I suppose when you've got a known objective, a known target, a battle line or a bunker that you want to destroy, absolutely send the engineers in. They bust it open, and then that's it. The cavalry just charge across to break through and continue the momentum through the, you know, through the enemy lines and into their, you know, supply logistics areas, which sounds a bit optimistic for orcs, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it might be called a logistics area for by humans, but it is just a part.
Yeah, exactly.
Or weapons.
Yeah. We'll destroy it all. We have to. So to bring that to life, I've given my warlord trait is going to be bellowing voice. So that gives me a 3-inch extension to my abilities. So my voice command. So that feels like shouting as they're all charging in. A cheeky little relic, which is the dagger of Tu Siak, which allows the bearer and one unit to appear 6 inches off the table edge and 9 away from enemy infantry. So a kind of sneaky out flank from one of the squadrons. So again, I think just trying to keep the opponent off guard. They don't know where they're coming from. you know, they can hear tunneling, they can hear hoofs, but they don't know where they're coming from. Then to picked an agenda to go with this one, which is breakthrough. And at the end of the battle, up to three units that end up wholly within 6 inches of the enemy's table edge score an extra 2 experience points each. So again, that whole idea of rewarding what I want them to do, and kind of bring them to life. So yeah, I think for me they feel really good fun, and I think they would look great, and I think they all absolutely just show how different Death Corps Krieg are to your regular Guard army.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. It's coolest. Plus, it's got Death Riders in it, so I'm a Philia fan.
Yes. So how are you going to stop that, Dan?
You kind of started talking about, when you were talking about this list kind of offline, you were talking about this sort of almost like a reconnaissance force.
Yes.
And I don't think we, at that point, we hadn't kind of, we hadn't included the Hades breaching drills. And now, then when I saw the list, I thought, okay, I can still do what I want to do with my Orc army that I'd almost like preemptively said and done in my head. So I wanted to use the commandos because the new commandos in the Kill Team box are fantastic. So I've taken 5 of those. And then I thought, I'm going to use this little force as a Blood Axe force because, you know, Blood Axe commandos, it's fitting. And so what I wanted to have is almost like a counter-recce force. Yeah. So whilst you're trying to probe the enemy lines with your Death Riders before you send in your Hades Breaching Drills, I've got a little Blood Axe force that's trying to disrupt your own plan. So maybe like burning all your horse's hay and, putting stones in your horse's hooves and stuff like that.
Stealing all the carrots.
Absolutely. All the sugar lumps, that kind of thing. So the Blood Axe culture is tactics. So each time a ranged attack is made against a unit with this culture, if the attacker is more than 18 inches away, then the unit with this culture is treated as having the benefit of light cover. So not hugely relevant for your army, given that they're quite close combat related, sort of quite close quarters sort of related, but it's just an interesting one anyway, for maybe sort of larger battles when you've got longer range stuff. And then units with this culture are eligible to shoot or declare a charge with, but not both, in a turn which they fell back. So I thought that was quite allowed some kind of nice tactics, nice tactical flexibility, which fitted the armor. They do have a warlord trait which allows you to redeploy, but with the number of units, the type of units I had, I didn't fancy doing that. They also have a stratagem. So this is dead sneaky for 1 CP. At the end of your movement phase, if the mission you're playing is using strategic reserves, select one Blood Axe infantry unit from your army that is within 3 inches of a battlefield edge and place that unit in strategic reserve. So I thought this was quite cool for maybe the Storm Boys, which I've included in the list. And that would allow me to kind of maybe come on, jump away, and then come back off, and then jump back on and add a few time.
Yeah, no, they're sneaky.
That's the theme, Steve. The theme is sneaky orcs. I've got my 5 commandos and I've got my 5 Storm Boys. I thought they'd be led by a weird boy, and he'd be backed up with a kind of just like another a group of 10 boys. So that's that's 17 power levels so far. And the idea was that your Storm Boys clearly can zoom around on the jump packs, and commandos can kind of infiltrate around, but the boys need to have a way of getting around. So the way I thought is that I could use my weird boy to cast De Jump. So De Jump is a psychic power which players may be familiar with from previous editions, but this is from the Power of the War Discipline. And the psychic powers in the Orc Codex are split into 2. So you've got the War Discipline and the Beast Head Discipline, clearly Beast Head Discipline for the Beast Snaggers psychers. So De Jump is a blessing and it has a warp charge value of 7. If it's manifested, you select one friendly core unit within 12 of the psyker, and you remove that unit from the battlefield and set them up anywhere on the battlefield more than 9 inches from enemy models. So imagine you could jump your boys to an area at the edge of the table, and then later you can later during the game you can then use your stratagem to
get them out. Yeah, absolutely. I think you'd really
obviously that's done at the end of the movement phase, so it would have to be the following turn, but it just gives you lots of tactical flexibility.
Yeah, I keep guessing, isn't it? I think that's the thing. You don't have a battle line anymore because these guys could appear anywhere, so he's got to keep everyone guessing as to what's going on. I like it.
Now, I wasn't that bothered about relics, as in I wasn't doing a huge amount of research into relics because I think the Blood Axe one is so good that it's quite, whether it's an auto take is one thing, but it's quite interesting. It's at the start of your command phase, if the bearer is on the battlefield, roll a d6, on a 4 up, you get a command point. So I just thought that's like, I'm definitely taking that because that suddenly pays for things like the stratagem Dead Sneaky that we've just discussed. Yep. So Yeah, I think that's an auto take for Blood Axe armies. And then with my remaining 8 power level, I went for a Dakar jet. So this would be like my spy plane, my Orky spy plane.
Yeah, I like it. And the fact it kind of makes sense that the tactical genius that the Blood Axes are the ones that could actually maybe call it in, designate some targets, and it comes in and lays down some supporting fire. So about as elite as you get exactly. with Orcs, I think, isn't it?
Definitely. Now, that was 25 power levels, so that didn't allow me to use something called custom jobs. This is something which I think is really cool. It's essentially a way of customizing, clearly with a K, customizing your vehicles or units with specific things, and it adds certain power level or points. So they're basically like, you know, war gear upgrades, but I just think it's really interesting. So, for example, like Fortress on Wheels, trucks or wagons, they get a 5 up and vulnerable safe. And my plan was to give more Dakar to the Dakar jet. So this is so good. Each time this vehicle shoots, roll 1d6. On a 4 up, make one additional attack with each Dakar weapon this model is equipped with. On a 6, make 2 additional attacks with each Dakar weapon this model is equipped with instead.
How many Dakars it's got?
Well, let's just refer to the Dakar jet. A Dakar jet is equipped with 4 super shooters, and you can equip it with 2 additional super shooters, so 6 total. And a super shooter is Dakar 6/4.
Wow, okay.
So you're getting an extra 6 shots on a 4-up, or and if you're on a 6, an extra 12 shots.
This new way of describing the number of shots, 6/4, that's a new thing thing for Orcs, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's a new weapon type. So Dakar allows you to use, basically, you use the first number if you're within half range, and the second number if you any time else.
Yeah.
And, you know, Super Shooter's got range 36, and you're a flyer, so, you know, it's fairly easy to get within 18-inch range.
Yeah, no, that could hose down a squadron quite easily, I would have thought.
That could do. That was the plan. But you're lucky, because I haven't been able to customize my Dakar jet because I don't have any power level points.
Yes. But again, playing Crusade, get some requisition, soon start growing that, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. So a Crusade force can't start with any custom jobs. So you have to spend scrap points, which is a Crusade specific Orc rule. And then you can get your custom jobs.
Ah, nice. It's good that we're starting to see more and more Crusade specific rules for factions.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, the ones out of the start, out of the main rulebook are great, but the fact that we're getting more specific ones, and we're getting the ones from the Crusade battle packs, you know, that's coming with more stuff. I think it just means you can get more unique armies with even just the same models.
Yeah, definitely. Although I should point out that you do need to have a mech or big mech unit in your order of battle to spend scrap points on the custom jobs or patch-ups.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
That is, yeah, I just think it's really cool.
Someone realizes that a spanner is more than just for hitting things with.
Absolutely.
Although that usually fixes things as well,
that
to be
tends
fair.
To, yeah, absolutely.
Hit it with the spanner.
You've been to the same DIY school I have, Steve.
Yeah, that doesn't work. You have to call a man in.
So there we go. So that is our little kind of overview of Kill Team. Not really an overview of Kill Team, but more a discussion around Kill Team, using Kill Team as a vehicle, a ramshackle Orky truck vehicle, to kind of discuss some of our things that get us interested about the two forces that come with the thing. And I'm certainly excited about getting that terrain together. And I'm, you know, sorely tempted to use it as an excuse to get some of those Forge World kits out of the cupboard and build some more Krieg. But I've also got an Orc army on the go, so yeah, there's just too much choice. What are you going to be doing first, Steve?
I think I'm going to make the Deathcore models. Can't decide whether I'm going to make them for just a painting project because they are so lovely looking, or whether I'm going to have them as a merged regiment, or whether I steal some bits to make some custom models to go with my Talan. I think for me, the one thing I'm keen to do is, as we're now pretty much open to play more games with people, and my fingers crossed that stays that way, I'm kind of keen to get all the Talan stuff I did during lockdown actually out and played. Let's get some games in with it. I've got lots of choices with them now. I've got lots of models. So yeah, but the models are so lovely. I think I'm going to, when I get my set, I'm going to use my use my guys for that. Make them as a painting project. Try and paint my hardest paint.
Do the best painting that you can type thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think the models will deserve it. And also, you know, it allows me to do something, say, just a little bit rougher. And maybe if I take my theme from my original one, so maybe they are trudging through the mud. I think I've got some, from a long time ago, I've got some barbed wire. So maybe if I have them battling through barbed wire as they're going through the mud leading over the top, maybe that's what I'll do with them.
That sounds really cool. And certainly for me, I'm going to be cracking out that terrain first. Yeah, we spoke about doing a kind of mech town, and I'm going to combo it with that kind of Necromunda sort of fortification building thing, whatever it's called, the gang stronghold, and basically make a big orky table. So this has worked out incredibly well for me, I think.
Yeah, yes, Dan, you've rolled a double six.
Absolutely, a natural 20. So thanks very much, guys, and all that remains is to say keep calm and crusade on.
Yeah, cheers, guys.